The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 15th of July, 2026, and you are on the clock with Erin. I can't go home green. Why can't I go home? Well, because there's a raccoon waiting for me at home. He want to know why I picked the Gnep so early. He says he's grieving, he's suffering a loss, and I am responsible for it. I can't go home, not yet. But that song is The Gambler Can't Go Home by Mumra, right? And I found this on the Mic Check Performance Rake and Scrape playlist. I'm telling you, if you're trying to keep up with the newest Rake and Scrape in the country, this is one spot to tune into. Right? It is just, I don't want to say it's a breath of fresh air. That's not really what it is. It is so great to see a space where Bahamian artists don't necessarily have the capacity, like the money, the resources, and the time to make their own music video, right? Like the Mic Check Performance allows them to add their music and their video, their visuals, the whole concept to the Bahamian public catalog. The song we played yesterday was called S.O.B. by Fliston. I know a lot of people may have thought, well, why Erin play this song, right? Because it started with this one for the street by them, right? This one for the robbers. But if you listen a little more into the song, what S.O.B. means is son of a boy, right? Son of a boy. And in the song, he's really talking about what happens to young men who are the sons of boys, right? And in that, there is a grief, right? Like, he is expressing loss and grief and trying to imagine a space for these bad man them to reconcile with their own experience, right? To see themselves as human. And to understand that they okay, you know, like, you're okay. Within you, you're okay. You just happen to be the son of a boy. You didn't have someone to raise you the way some others do, right? So anyway, I just am so happy to the Mic Check team that they make it easier for me to find Bahamian music. And it's not to find Bahamian music that's relevant to our lives, because all of the music is relevant to who we are. These are Bahamians telling Bahamian stories. And we need more of that. I have joining me today Dr. Reginald Eldon. He's a certified grief recovery method specialist. And we're going to be talking about grief and loss. We've had tragedy after tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. I want to create a space. I have some questions for Dr. Eldon. He has words to share with us. And I want to open people who have, I want to say, sort of specific questions. It's not a counseling session. But at the same time, we are also going to talk about how we hold space for others. And sometimes people we don't even know, have no connection to. And the radio station, this radio space, all of them, can be a space where we can grieve in a healthy way, we can create space for others to grieve and to support their grief. We just had the death of a avid listener and regular contributor to all of the shows on the Guardian platform. And it was a blow to me. It was a blow to the staff at Guardian Talk Radio that listened to the shows regularly, you know? And so we're going to take some time for that conversation today, especially since the papers are also filled with sort of examples of moments or instances, right, where we can recognize loss and grief and talk about how it affects us. Now, just before we get there, something very interesting happened yesterday. Yesterday, the lower federal house in the United States of America passed a law. Well, now when I say they passed a law, they passed a bill through the house. It now has to go to the upper chamber, and then it goes to the president. But the bill itself is called the Sunshine Protection Bill. And I thought to myself, who need, the sun need protection? I need protection from the sun. And then I thought, okay, hold on. Are people so mad at the climate that they're going to go fight the sun? Are y'all going to go and try and fight the sun? So much so that the sun needs protection? Please don't try and fight the sun. This is a battle you will lose. But the United States of America yesterday passed a bill through the lower house called the Sunshine Protection Act. Here are words directly from the mouth of the President of the United States of America. This was, I'm not sure why the date on it is, but it's from his Truth Social account. Big vote today, 48-1 in the Energy and Commerce Committee. That's what it is. So this is May 21st. On a bill including the Sunshine Protection Act, many of these clocks are located in towers, and the cost of renting or using heavy equipment to do this twice a year is prohibitive. He's talking about changing the clocks back and forth. It says the House will be attaching the Sunshine Protection Act to the highway bill. So this is just a fascinating rabbit hole. Maybe at the sort of the end of the show, we may have more time to talk about it. But I just wondered, are people aware that this is happening? And then the question for me is, if the United States of America makes daylight savings time permanent, will we also make daylight savings time permanent? Right? I think that's a big question for us, and how will it affect us? Right now, there's no certainty that the bill will make it all the way to the president, right? Because there's been opposition from farmers who, like, they have a special relationship with the sun. And we should appreciate it because the things they tend to have special relationships with the sun. And so I just thought this was a fascinating conversation. And I wondered if people knew the origin of daylight saving time. And did you know that in 1973, in fact, I'm going to read from this article. I give you the headline because it is, again, a fascinating article. What is the history of daylight saving time, Fox Weather, 1st of November, 2025. Will daylight saving time become permanent? Daylight saving time has sown divisions over the years, stirring debate about whether it should become permanent or end once and for all. In December 1973, a bill was signed into law to make daylight saving time permanent for 2 years. It was called the Emergency Daylight Savings Time Energy Act. The law was intended to help the U.S. save energy during the oil crisis. After a few months, however, the public soured on the permanent time change, and the law was amended in October 1974. The part about that is, right now, we need to be conserving energy, and we're still not sure if this is wartime. Like, we're still not sure if the world is at war. Are we in World War III? Are we not? We're not sure, but I just thought, what a fascinating conversation taking place right next to us, and I wanted to throw it on the table. How could it possibly affect us in the future. I see I have a caller on the line. I'm going to take one call before we get into our show. Good morning, caller.
A pleasant good morning, Ms. Green. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Thank you very much for taking my call. I heard most of the talk during the week and the weeks before with the sadness and the depression that hit our nation over the loss of lives and the deaths and so forth. And as I stood and listened to the, even with Dr. Enos, the psychiatrist he had on yesterday, talking about the many hurts that we as Bahamians have, mm-hmm. and how we tend to, instead of build up one another, we bring down one another. I reflected on June the 7th, 1996, when on 10 o'clock in the morning, waiting for somebody to pick me up to go to Labor Day Junkanoo, I got a call sitting on my porch. It says, Mr. Vince Fountain, is this you, ma'am? Well, this is Miss Darcy from St. Matthew's Church. I say, good morning, ma'am. There's been an accident up on Shirley Street with your son. First thing I said is, what hospital he's to? They say, he's not to a hospital, sir. He's underneath a white sheet. He's just been killed on Shirley Street. He was knocked from the entrance of Harbor Bay, almost 108 feet up by Lee's Carpet Craft. On June the 7th, Brave Davis' birthday, and he was only 15 years old, and his class had just won JA of the year, and he had just celebrated that Monday in my shoes down at the zoo, and I saw my son no more. And today, every morning, I wake up, and the first thought comes to my mind, is Kashawn Vincent Fountain. Everybody still remembers him from Kingsway. And I remember my son. And you never get rid of the hurt when you lose a family member. Because my mother died when I was 15 years old. I am 75 now. And I think and look at the pictures every day. Miss Green, you know about it. You lost parents. You never forget a loved one.
Absolutely.
Have fun, everybody. Let's get together and build a commonwealth of the Bahamas. Stop bringing one another down. Stop this PLPF and MCOI. We are Bahamians. The commonwealth of the Bahamas is the God-blessed, prettiest nation in the world.
Thank you, Sparky. Thank you for that. And I think what Sparky's words may call up for some of us is that grief is always with us. It is always around us because loss is always with us and always around us. There will always be loss. We will always experience it, right? And so we will always have grief. But for many of us, we are unable to or we refuse to recognize these moments of loss or feelings of grief. We refuse to recognize them for what they are, and they have great impact on our lives. Again, joining me this morning is Dr. Reginald Eldon. He is a certified grief recovery method specialist. And he reached out to me, well, because technically I don't call him Dr. Reginald. I call him Uncle Reg, mm-hmm. right? And I know Uncle Reg from Methodist Summer Camp. And even that, right, like as joyous as Methodist Summer Camp is, I always feel a loss and a degree of grief because I ain't summer camping no more. I am no longer a camp counselor. I'm no longer in that space. So like not only do I sort of grieve for not being able to do those things I used to do, I grieve because I am no longer at that age. I am no longer 7, 12, 13. I'm down all day fighting mosquitoes and having a blast, right? And I think like that is a healthy sort of grief because I acknowledge it's a time that I can't get back, but that I can reflect on, right? And I could tell stories. And I guess the only thing I grieve about now is that I don't have grandchildren that I could have sent to camp, or I could sit down and say, oh, you thought Z&S was bad. Wait till you have to hear my million stories about summer camp, right? But the grief, loss lives with us, and so does grief. And I think it's important for us to acknowledge that and then to, I want to say, like, prepare our lives to live in a way that manifests, recognizes, understands that loss will always be with us and grief will always be with us. You cannot get rid of them, but how do we process them in a healthy way? After, like I say, after weeks of tragedy, Dr. Eldon reached out to me to ask if I would be open to having a conversation about grief and loss, but also about, like, what it means to grieve at a national level. Like, what it means to come together as a country, as a community, as a collective, and grieve. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, Aaron. Good to hear you. Good to be here. Good to see you.
Yes, especially since we are in the month where we're going to recognize the 50th anniversary of Methodist camping in the Bahamas.
Yeah, the very first camp that we held at Windermere High School in South Eleuthera was in July, and it was 50 years ago. And our theme was Youth Ticks in 76. Mm-hmm. All of our T-shirts and songs, and that was the camp where we were expecting like 110 people or so, and like 270 some people turned up, and that challenged everything because water, even then in South Eleuthera, was very difficult to come by, and of course we didn't have enough food to serve all those people. We didn't need space. We had to use the local school, put up tents in the local park, and it was just an amazing event. And that started this whole movement where thousands of Bahamians and people from other countries have gone through our camping program and leadership training, because most summers we had 40, 50, 60 young people, teenagers, who were staff members in the camp, as you know, because you was one. And that developed a group of leaders that have performed and still performing in every aspect of Bahamian life, both theological, spiritual, as well as governmental and service industry. Mm-hmm. So it's been an amazing journey. And 50 years, that's hard to imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was very, very young when that happened. Mm-hmm. I remember.
Two of my sort of first experiences around grief and loss took place like in Eleuthera. One was the year where we had 80 campers and 110 people in total. And I was quickly told as a counselor in training or camp, as a counselor, that I'd lost my bed. I lost my bed for the camp. And I felt a loss. I felt upset, like, how am I going to make it through this camp? Where am I going to sleep? I have to sleep on the ground. And then I discovered the life of the counselors, right? And listen, the people without a bed had so much fun. Like, that was in, right? Like, everybody in that experience, nobody was going to let not having a bed. But more importantly, that every camper had a bed, knowing that was just so fulfilling as a counselor. Like, all the kids were straight, and we're going to make it work, right? And, like, sort of turning loss into something else, right? By sort of processing the grief. And then collectively, it was grief no more. The second experience is far, far more sad and tragic. A classmate, Raquel Horton, had passed away. Now, we were in New Providence, I think it was the summer, but she died on Glass Window Bridge. You know, and it was the first time that we experienced this collective loss. Someone who I knew, but I wasn't very close to, but knew well enough to feel it and to feel their absence. And from then to now, I realized that we, the Bahamas, in this Western culture, I think have lost our way when it comes to living with loss, living with death, and honoring the dead. And so I hope today we can provide some information, some questions for people to ask themselves or ask people close to them, and some resources and tips for people who are experiencing loss and grief. So I don't know if you want to get started, like, what is grief, what is loss, and how do they live together?
They have a close relationship. Grief is the outcome of loss. Loss is across the board, as you've said in this first part of the show. Loss could be the fact that you grieve over your past. You're getting older, you getting bald, you have arthritis, you can't walk, you can't get up. Your energy and your mind is still good. You've lost, many of your friends have died. And so there's a grieving process for loss of any kind. Even a loss of a pet is a major thing, especially older people who live at home and the only thing they have is their cat or their dog. And people think, well, oh, that's only a dog, you can get another one. But grief is, people suffer from grief. I had a lady who lost her mobility and independence. And it was like, my life is finished. I have to depend on people to take me everywhere, do everything for me. The other loss that we don't give enough attention to is divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly ever do we have a 50-50 separation where both people want to separate.
Mm-hmm.
Usually one person is still in love with the other person and the other person is not in love with them. So there's hurt and loss, and that's what we call living loss, because mm-hmm. you still have to live. The person that you're mourning and grieving is still living. Mm-hmm. And it isn't that you can go to a graveyard, put some flowers on the grave, or people will even give you sympathy,
mm-hmm.
because generally, you know, a lot of divorce cases, family and friends basically say, you'll do much better. There's more fish in the sea. You mm-hmm. can catch somebody else.
There's no space for grief after divorce for the person who didn't want a divorce.
Yes.
Because
yes,
you have
yes.
to leave them alone.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Like, no, you can't.
Yes.
Fascinate over them. You can't obsess yes. over them. You have yes. to give them their space.
Yes. And many people who might, there's some people who might proceed and wish for divorce to get out of the abuse or the death kind of relationship that they're in. They can't do that because religiously they think that divorce is sinful and not accepted by God. And therefore, they will stay in a situation of pain and hurt and mm-hmm. abuse and non-love in order to try to satisfy the church or their principles or God or whatever, which I think is not a good thing, because I don't think anybody should be in a relationship where there's considerable pain and certainly abuse of any kind, and they should not really try to stay into that.
Yeah. I also think about, like, sometimes we think the person is obsessing over the partner, the ex, when really they're grieving the loss of a larger family
yes.
construct.
Yes. Yes.
Right? And
yes.
so it's not, okay, it's not that I can't get over my ex-wife. It's that I can't get over not coming home to family, right?
Yes, because they've lost all of that. For mm-hmm. instance, if they had a house together and the divorce settlement means that they sell the house and split the money. But the fact is, home is lost
mm-hmm.
and the familiar areas, the familiar patterns are lost. Mm-hmm. That is grief. That causes grief. And of course, we haven't even talked about what happens to children in those
yeah.
cases. And different ages of children suffer different ways, you
mm-hmm.
know, and then we have some families that say, well, couples, well, we're staying together basically for the children.
Right.
But the children also pick up
right.
on the non-commitment and the non-love, and it's also very difficult for them as well.
Yeah, and so sometimes the child would say, I would have rather you have divorced because I'm now grieving a mother
yes.
who had less attention or energy for me because she's processing the proximity she's trying to keep with
yes. me. Yeah. So grief and loss, grief basically is the process,
mm-hmm.
what we go through, the thing that travels with us, the thing that covers us over, the thing that is deep in
mm-hmm.
our spirits and souls, of loss of any kind. And a lot of people don't even recognize when they're tired, they're fully exhausted, they don't have energy, they'd rather stay home than go out, they don't want to venture into anything new, they basically are living an energyless life. A lot of people don't recognize those symptoms, but in many, many cases, those symptoms are signs of grief. Because grief is continually, it's almost like having your water heater on, and it's continually taking energy, causing, you know, eating energy. And the loss continually eats your energy and takes away from your loss. The institute that I was certified in grief and loss recovery, they basically say that one of the slogans is, we will help you to get your life back. Because a lot of people don't deal with the grief, and they live a kind of muffled life, as though you're driving with your foot on the brakes. You're still going, you're still living, but there's a heaviness that holds you back. And I don't know if people listening realize, and if you've had those experiences, but many times if you have that experience and that's how you feel, I find the foot on the brake is a good example, because sometimes it you don't know what it is, and you go to a doctor, and a doctor basically gives you prescriptions and whatnot, but basically it's a soul matter. You need a soul doctor to try to find out where the hurt is and where there is need for forgiveness and where there is need to at least own the fact that you're grieving.
Like, I want to say, I'm not making a moral judgment on how people relationship, but if you're going into relationship with people who you know are connected to other people already, right? Like, grieve, you know, like maybe you could be, you could focus on, why did I put so much weight into somebody who I know could not be completely mine, right? Like, just asking a question like that may reveal to somebody something that has them stuck, right? Because maybe you are still grieving for a father who couldn't be there for you because you were an outside child. Right. And so you're just desperate for love, and you're unaware of the dangerous dynamics involved in that relationship. There's so much to talk about. We got to go to a break. On the other side of the break, more questions. And then we're going to talk specifically about, how do we grieve collectively, and how do we process national loss at a national level? You're On the Clock with Erin Green. Joining us is Dr. Reginald Eldon. We'll be right back.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing these knives to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Wait, he fooled with Joe girl.
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't back down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you want?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. We gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean, cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I avoid?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pen from them, and you can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you're saying.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Struggling to find your financial rhythm? Make that move to Fidelity and let us help you orchestrate your financial goals into perfect harmony with free financial coaching services. Make that move today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Hey. Hey, kids, are ready. It's back. The Jeff Rogers Summer Basketball Camp. July 27th to 31st at the Kendall Isaacs Gym, 2 to 5 p.m. daily. And August 3rd to 8th, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. for boys and girls from 5 to 18. Come enjoy the thrills of the big game alongside NBA legends and current superstars Michael Sweetbelt Thompson, Michael Jr., Klay Thompson, Buddy Hield, Muggsy Bogues, and many others. Registration forms available now at the Seventh-day Adventist offices on Tony Williams Darling Highway. The Jeff Rogers Summer Basketball Camp.
Put more money back in your pocket with the Fidelity Debt Consolidation Loan. Why pay more when you can pay less? Reduce your monthly debt payments down to one low, easy payment. Apply for a Fidelity Debt Consolidation Loan today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
No budget for a vacation this summer? No worries. We got you. Guardian Radio 96.9 will fly you and a guest to South Florida for a vacation of a lifetime. Our sweet summer escape gets you round-trip tickets on Bahamas Air. $1,000 spending cash, thanks to Percy's Island Games. Brand new luggage from Brass and Leather. 4 days and three nights at the beautiful Holiday Inn Express Plantation. Free car rental from Hertz, too. All you need is your passport. We got you covered. Enter now for the Guardian Radio 96.9 Sweet Summer Escape. Fill out the form in today's Nassau Guardian and follow us on all social media platforms. Remember, you must be 18 or older to enter. Entry deadline August 12th, drawing August 14th. Taxes not included and certain restrictions apply.
Calling all football fans, there's only one place to catch the FIFA World Cup final. Join Nassau Cruise Port and Diageo on Sunday, July 19th at the amphitheater at Nassau Cruise Port. Gates open at 1 p.m. with kickoff at 3 p.m. Music by DJ Kenny, DJ Tank. Visit NassauCruiseport.com for pricing and more information. Don't miss the FIFA World Cup final watch party at Nassau Cruise Port, July 19th. Gates open at 1 p.m.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
At Cleveland Clinic, you set your course, not cancer. So when your journey takes an unexpected turn, you seek out the experts who've conquered it before, and you forge new paths to help fight cancers. For every route to a cure, for every care in the world. See how we're innovating cancer care at Cleveland Clinic today.
No budget for a vacation this summer? No worries. We got you. Guardian Radio 96.9 will fly you and a guest to South Florida for a vacation of a lifetime. Our sweet summer escape gets you round-trip tickets on Bahamas Air. $1,000 spending cash, thanks to Percy's Island Games. Brand new luggage from Brass and Leather. 4 days and three nights at the beautiful Holiday Inn Express Plantation. Free car rental from Hertz, too. All you need is your passport. We got you covered. Enter now for the Guardian Radio 96.9 Sweet Summer Escape. Fill out the form in today's Nassau Guardian and follow us on all social media platforms. Remember, you must be 18 or older to enter. Entry deadline August 12th, drawing August 14th. Taxes not included and certain restrictions apply.
Welcome back to On the Clock with Aaron Green. What you were listening to just now is a portion of a tribute by Nishi LS to the victims of the North Andres plane crash, right? There's some in the way that we live that makes me so sad about death, right? Like, it just, every time it happens, it just smacks us in the face as if we weren't prepared for it, right? And what I grieve is that I don't understand how we got to this place, because hearing Nishi LS sing that song, that's a joyous noise. She's raising energy. And that's how I want to celebrate life, right? Not death, but that's how I want to celebrate the life of those people who have passed, who've been close to me. But Reg, let's get right into the conversation. Grieving at a national, or grieving collectively, loss at a national level, the vigil and the vigilante, right? I think the vigil is an example of a healthy collective grieving, right? Holding space, not just for those closest to the loss, but also for those, it allows those who have less proximity to the loss to also express their grief or to feel their feelings, right, in an appropriate way. And I think the lack of these healthy spaces, along with some other things, can produce the vigilante. So, like, for families who are suffering from sudden, unexpected, or violent death, right, loss from a sudden, unexpected, violent act, that they have more space to grieve if they are not focused on the investigation. Like, what's happening? Will we see justice in this matter? Will the authorities ever find out exactly what happened to my loved one, right? And we have an obligation to hold space for each other. And I think one of those obligations is ensuring that systems work properly, so families who have experienced loss can grieve, can focus on grieving as opposed to focusing on seeking or achieving justice for their family member.
Well, you and I were talking before the show began, and I was sharing about, like, those tragic deaths and that involve justice or injustice, murders, situations where someone has died in the hospital and the family feel that it was something about treatment and non-treatment or care, whatever. Mm-hmm. Those kind of situations, they have two things going for them. It's the grief of the loss and it's the anger of the loss. And so grief and anger join hands and become twins. And they produce a different kind of apathy and a different kind of hurt and loss of energy and disassociation. Mm-hmm. Because lots of people who suck their teeth and say, this is this and this is that, or this is, you know, it's because they've been in situations where their hurt, their loss, has been compounded by the lack of thoroughness and the lack of answers and the lack of empathy and understanding. Mm-hmm. It's always sad when that happens, because we may say, those of us that have never been in jail or don't have any criminal records and those kind of things, we may say, well, those criminals deserve it. But let me just say that every criminal who is shot, or every person who dies, they have a mother and a father and a grandmother and grandmother and sisters and brothers and friends and aunties and uncles and cousins, whatever. What happens with that, it may be a little, I usually use the example of a concentric circle, where there's a little circle and then a next circle and another circle and another circle and another circle. And collective grief and national grief, there's a difference in those two, but national grief is when all of those circles are involved, not only the little intimate circle, but the next circle and the next circle and the next circle. In grief that is tragic, from loss, tragic loss, those people are not only, it doesn't only affect the immediate family. It affects everybody. It affects the bar where that person used to hang out. It affects the church that person used to go to, or some mm-hmm. of their family go to. It affects their cousins in Cat Island or Andros or Eleuthera. It affects, because no one wants their loved one killed. It don't matter what's going on. It doesn't. Yeah. And so what happens as a result of that, you get all of these individuals, all these groups, all these families, all these people who are angry, hurt, withdrawn, and who basically blame somebody. Many times they blame the state. And therefore, they disassociate from supporting that in the future. So the reason we have so many people who do not tie into and blend or give or commit to national development and being involved in the country is because many of them are outside because they feel they have had no justice in terms of this whole area of loss. And it's a very serious situation. Now, national grieving is, I always use the death of President John F. Kennedy. That was world grieving. You know, everybody grieved for him. When Princess Diana died, that was world grieving.
I remember where I was when Princess Diana died.
Me too. And it's like everybody's grieving because everybody somehow had been connected, like that person had somehow given hope. There was a tie-in to individuals from Africa, from Australia, to America, whatever. Everybody's tied in.
We thought that Princess Diana was the spirit that would change the crown. We thought she had the power to change imperialism and racism, everything.
So the loss is significant. With national death, we've had numbers of tragedies here, you know. The big tragedy when Pastor Miles Monroe's plane going to Grand Bahama crashed, that was a national tragedy. That was also something of a global tragedy because so many people across the world knew him and his ministry and his radio and TV program. So everybody is tied into the suffering, to the loss, because what people grieve is the potential that has also died and the future that has died. You know, so if... when my sister's husband died, my brother-in-law, some years ago, it was a lot of grief, but there were some things that were tangible. Like he will never ever see his grandchild, so that's a grief which continues as the grandchild grows and develops. It's like, well, you know, your granddaddy would have been really happy to see you. And he'd loved you so much.
He would
much.
Have been proud of you in this
moment. So there's all of that grief. There's people who lose their partner, a husband or wife or best friend or whatever, and they grieve the future that is also dead. There's not going to be a retirement. There's not going to be the vacations.
We won't have kids.
We will never have grandchildren because our son died. We will, you know, and it's like you're dealing with the immediate pain, but the minute you start thinking that that's getting over a little bit, you trying to cope somehow, then you start thinking about, I don't know what I'm going to do because I have no partner in the future. And many people suffer because in some way they feel that there's something that they could have done to prevent the death. Now, I don't know if you've, I'm sure you have because you are very committed to this. Some of the reports, like I've heard people coming out and saying, well, this could have been avoided, or this was because of this, or this was because of that. We all do that. We search for reasons to make us, to help us to accept it, and then, or to mean we don't accept it. The sad thing is that after a while, the radicalization of death and the follow-up and grief is often forgotten, you know, and we'll remember it like every year. When the anniversary of the HMS Flamingo happens, we have a little memorial. We remember it. We write about it. It's something about it. But the fact is, it's not near as raw and painful as it was the day it happened or the year it happened. But the thing is, if people do not do something about grief, then what happens is that it accumulates. We call it cumulative. So if you're grieving your grandmother and then your mother dies and you grieve her, then your best friend dies and you grieve her, and then your teacher dies, you grieve. It's like all of those griefs and experiences pile on top of each other. And that's why some people who have lost a lot of in a short amount of time, why the grieving is more intense, because they probably ask questions, well, I wonder who's next. And with the tragedies, let me just finish off this segment. A lot of people connect to that because they say, I'll charters to the Family Islands.
Mm-hmm.
I also drive down Shirley Street. I also, and it's like, it could have been me. And mm-hmm. what if it was me? And so there's some serious questions that arise out as a result of the tragedies we've had and the whole idea of national grief.
Listen, national grief, the loss of Miles Monroe, his wife, and the other members of the church.
Pastor Pinder.
My cousin was married to Manifest, and she was with child. Tremendous loss. In 2019, I made my way to Zambia in the middle of the Livingstone National Park for a conference. And walking through the veranda where they had items for sale, book table, I take a stop because I love books. And I speak to the young man, and he asked, the first thing he asked me is, are you from the Bahamas? And then the second thing he does is he begins pointing out all of the Miles Monroe books. And the third thing he does is he shares condolences, right? And so people will know, I recognize who Miles Monroe is and what he means to the Bahamas. Not necessarily the same to me for various reasons. People may know why, but I understood in that moment that he had an opportunity to grieve, right? It was an opportunity for him to connect with a Bahamian, someone who had proximity to Monroe. And so I took that, you know, I saw it and I respected it and I shared that moment with him because he's a good Bahamian ambassador. We don't row Bahamians when we abroad, right? Like there was no time for that. This was a time for grief and for making space for someone to share. And I just wanted to say to young, to the son and daughter, you know, your father's legacy has just traveled the world. And be proud of that.
I've had that happen to me everywhere I go, whatever part of the world I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
Where the minute people hear, like, I'm from the Bahamas, it's like, oh, you know Pastor Miles Monroe. And it's constant. It still happens. Mm-hmm. It still happens.
And so you call to hold space for others.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it's not necessarily, right? It has less to do with how you feel about the person that is being grieved, but your respect for an acknowledgement of this vital human process. And if you could help somebody go through that, then you help somebody go through that.
Yes. And you see with the air crash and the car accident, the recent two that we're talking about a lot, everybody can relate to that because it's like a generic group. Mm-hmm. It's we don't think, well, oh, that was the senator for the PLP or the MP for the FNM or whatever. This is like across the board, just people, human beings who are somebody's husband, somebody's friend, somebody's child. And therefore, anybody from any walk of life can tie into that and feel the grief.
Yeah. I think one of the most prevalent or prominent things was this sort of hearing people, these are young people. You know, let's hold space for young people, right? And because it could have been my young person. It could have been my neighbor's child. It could have been my nephew. Yeah, he bad head, but he's still my nephew, man. I still have love for him. Producer, do we have time to take this last caller? No? Caller, I am so sorry. We're all out of time. Dr. Eldon, can I beg you to come back?
Yes, because I want to talk a little bit more. One of the areas I want to talk about is friendship, a death of a friend.
Yeah.
Because these people have been totally ignored a lot as friends in the funeral process. Also, I want to talk about the commercialization that we've done to funerals in the Bahamas.
All right.
And how we don't, it's like we dress up grief.
Yeah.
Literally. And it becomes more of a performance and a show. And that is basically our way of handling death. Similarly, one of the realities is when, for instance, when a grave is covered in flowers, it's like, it basically is a sham in a way, and you know I love flowers, but it hides the reality of the soil to know that this person has been ash to ash,
dust
to dust. As we do in a lot of areas where I think people can get help, and
So I'm going to have you back soon, hopefully next week, if not the week after. Just before we go, guys, it's been a bit of a heavy show. I want to say as we walk through to the next show, Guardian Radio AM with you. Loss and grief will always be with us. right? We cannot get past them. We have to walk with them.
And the other thing is that we can recover.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now listen, guys, I want to remind you as we end the show, Nassau Cruiseport is calling all football fans. Join them at Nassau Cruiseport for the FIFA World Cup final on Sunday, July 19th. Gates open at 1 p.m. with kickoff at 3 p.m. Cheer on your favorite team while enjoying the match on the big screen. Visit Nassau Cruiseport on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn for more information. And if you've been watching World Cup, you've been watching people experience loss and grief.
Yes.
Also, Guardian Radio and the Guardian Media Group want to send you away for the summer with the Great Summer Escape Giveaway. You could win a trip for two, including hotel, car, luggage, and $1,000 cash. All you need is your passport. Just get a Nassau Guardian newspaper, fill out the entry form, drop it in the entry box at the Nassau Guardian in Oaksfield, and tune into Guardian Radio and follow the Nassau Guardian on all social media platforms for your chances to win. The Guardian Media Group Great Summer Escape Giveaway, deadline to enter August 12th, drawing August 14th. You guys have a great day. Keep space for each other.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.